Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Lauren Forsch. Lauren is a self-described drug dealer. She's a canna mom and a lot story. I'm really excited to hear her story to share with all you. And she's also the founder and CEO of Popped NYC. Thanks for joining us today, Lauren.
Thank you, Maynard. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have you on. You know, like I said, you have an amazing story that when we were touching base beforehand, I thought it was super unique, super amazing, if you want to get into that. But also, you know, talking about caretakers and caretakers needing caretaking and needing, you know, obviously self-care and everything like that. And especially caretakers, you know, special need moms. And going to be talking about stigma, normalization, and something that we know, as much as we talk about cannabis, CBD, everything like that, and we talk about education, you know, CBD for beginners, people who are just starting off, you know, obviously I think a lot of people, we just assume that everybody who listens here has been in the industry for a long time, but definitely how to talk to beginners, everything like that. So a lot of stuff going on here today. But you know, as I always say, we're going to start it off easy. Let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
Well, I'm in New York City.
New York City.
Lower East Side. Yeah.
Nice. Amazing. I guess I kind of get away with Popped NYC, right? But that's amazing. Now, congratulations, right? We're now here in a legalization world, you know, step by step, little bit by little. And talk to me a little bit about how it feels now, or kind of your first impression on not just legalization, but how it's come about and kind of, you know, the bill itself, how it all looks and how you feel about that.
Well, I have to say that although my participation as far as lobbying and all that stuff is limited, I've had access to all the people doing the groundwork because I've been busy on the entrepreneurial path. But I do consider myself an advocate. I was from the very beginning at the governor's listening sessions when they decided to start talking about cannabis 3 years ago. I was there in the audience, a little bit too afraid to pipe up. Who am I to be making a comment? All these people have been fighting for years. And now I see that, you know, I'm part of the process and part of the history, and it's really exciting. There's a great group of organizations booming out of New York, and I have to really give credit to them for making this happen. From my brother Vlad at Happy Monkey to my sister Tanya at Women Grow, and all of the women like Gia Marone and even the bigger organization of Women Grow. Actually, we were talking about Queens before. Dr. Shonda Macias, she goes by Queen now, which I love. So there's just a lot of people that have made this happen. The legendary Doug Green, who passed away in the last few years, really laid the groundwork for several years. And then attorneys and doctors, CB Counsel, Christina, and then Dr. Daryl Wong, really pioneers. And then even one of my friends who's now in California, Bad Mommy Edibles, Lolita Kosti, she introduced me to this whole world of women and men and all the, every humans, right? Humans. There's a strong pride alliance in New York. It's just cannabis unites everybody. Cannabis brings people together. It doesn't discriminate based on skin color, sexuality, or wealth. I've seen, especially at Happy Monkey, some of the craziest groups of people. It looks like a total joke, you know? It's like just really, really crazy, you know? And it's exciting to be part of it. So I think that one thing New York has done right is we held out. And I think we took advantage of some poor behavior by the governor actually really helped us. The timing was just right. I don't know who arranged that, but I have to say, I think it really helped out that the governor was in a bit of hot water. I feel terrible that a Me Too kind of accusation would that we need that kind of thing, that women need to have these horrible things happen in order for progress to be made in other areas. But I'm hoping that this is the beginning of a more progressive time in New York.
Well, definitely. And I mean, that's definitely, you know, in our society, you know, sickening, you know, and like you said, that that's what kind of has to move the needle. But I guess it's a little bit better than it was before, where this stuff would not only go, you know, underreported, but ignored completely and everything like that, you know, in that regard. Not perfect, you know, definitely not perfect, but hopefully we're making a lot of progress in that regard as well. And wow, Women Grow is amazing. There's no doubt about it. You know, all the great things that they do. So amazing organization. So love hearing that. And you know, you mentioned, right, that you were there in the audience and you didn't, you know, you felt like you didn't have the ability to stand up and pipe up and speak up, you know, especially, you know, as you mentioned, you know, amidst all these people who've been there on the, you know, and been pushing this for a long time, you know, but I think, you know, as we were talking about before we got on, you know, it's so important to be, you know, to speak up, to kind of own our power in that regard, because you know what, Lauren, like, you're powerful, you're doing amazing things already. Right. And I think, somebody's going to stand up, and sometimes it's not the person with the most integrity, you know, sometimes it's not the person, you know, with the best motivations at heart, you know. And there's a lot of unfortunately, you know, shady players in any industry, and there's a lot of shady players in cannabis, you know. So we need more people like Lawrence, you know, standing up. And I think that's once another thing that's also a process and like that. So I appreciate you sharing that, you know, talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I just want to say, I appreciate all those compliments, and I'm trying to let them flow through me, because I definitely feel that ego can be our enemy. When it comes to this, there is a lot of money to be had in the industry, and it does cloud judgment. It does for most people. And I think that this is an opportunity to have humility as well as confidence.
No doubt.
So that's something that I've felt like before I could step into the limelight, that I needed to work out and to be comfortable with, and feel content. And I appreciate your kind words, but I also think that, you know, I'm going to accept them graciously, but also with humility.
Thank you. And that's the main thing, right? Is it's, you know, I think sometimes there's this like pendulum that kind of swings, you know, in this human experience sometimes, you know, between this arrogance and this humility, you know, or this, and it's like, no, like humble confidence, you know, is a thing. Confident humility is a thing, you know, and that's kind of like, you know, we're sharing some stories about our Jewism. That was like, you know, our faith, you know, that's kind of one of the main things, you know, was what, you know, with like Moses, right? And not to get too started off track, right? But, you know, Moses, they say he was the most humble of all people, right? Did he not know that he was the leader of all these people? No, he did. But he knew that he had gifts that were given to him, and that's where it came from, you know? Not like, I think, oh, well, I'm so great, I do everything, I'm the greatest, look at me, you know, I'm the leader, you know, knowing that we have responsibility, because there's no doubt that each one of us have our own responsibilities and people that depend on us. And you know, we can definitely make change in the world, right? But realizing that we're tools. And also that's the essence of money too, right? Tool, I was always taught, is a tool, right? I mean, my dad didn't make it up, right? But I was always taught, you know, money is like shit. You know, you can, if it's, you know, you pile it up and it smells, right? Or you can spread it out and it makes things grow, you know, where it's like, you know, fertilizer, you know, and then it's kind of like that same thing, you know, if people, it's about me making money for me, it's not going to smell so good, right? But if it's something that spread it out, we can help others, we can do stuff with this, then it's, you know, it's better in my hands than someone else's hands in that regard, you know, so to speak. So, you know, so I appreciate that as well. And it's always, you know, like I said, a process, you know, this human experience is a process. Talk to me a little bit about your process, you know, your background with cannabis, and kind of what came here to pop, you know, how'd you get here, you know, so, you know, build that strength.
So actually my background, I studied advertising. I worked as a graphic designer in children's publishing. We call it edutainment. The products that I worked on, they were both educational and entertainment. And I always had jobs that I felt really good about the mission of what I was doing. And from there, I went to become a sales rep for a yearbook company. So I took my printing and design background and copywriting, and I taught schools, some private and some inner city schools, how to produce a publication, a printed publication, with budgets from anywhere from $1,000 to $80,000. And that was so powerful to work with, kids and teach them skills that they can carry with them. The industry has changed, and a lot of the skills that I teach, you can quickly learn through a program like Canva, or you can not learn the skills and come up with something just as beautiful. So it's interesting. It was tough to see that transition and to see something that you love lose kind of the culture and history behind it. And coming into cannabis, I wanted to make sure that, as someone who's used cannabis since I was a teenager, I still was definitely stymied by stigma, and definitely did it in the shadows, and definitely came from a place of privilege with my use of it, knowing that I would never get into any real trouble compared to what my brown, black brothers and sisters face just by doing the same thing. And knowing that, I felt that there was a need for me to kind of understand the stigma and the culture more. And so, using my journalistic background, I kind of went, I'm not going to say undercover because I was just me, but it was, I went into this, to kind of a different lifestyle, meeting different people who were all about cannabis all the time, and figuring out, separating the myth from the reality. And I realized that I have a lot of trust and faith in humanity, but I've realized that I need to question everything, and I need to see it for myself, and that my true north is deep within. And I'll bring it back to spirituality. I believe I've through this journey, I've solidified my faith in God, and that I was always kind of confused about how it worked. But what I decided is that God is within me, and God is within anybody who believes that God is within them. And that maybe it's even within people who don't, but I can't say for sure. But anyone who, if you believe it, it exists. And so, therefore, there's something common that we can have. And whether the God is cannabis, and, you know, in Judaism, we say don't believe in idols, but I'm willing to kind of go, well, you know, if it's within us and we're praying to something external, I can internalize that. I can kind of, what can I let go? What can I say? No, these are my hard and fast tenets. I think I'm getting off track a little bit, but.
No, I love this.
And this is me sober. This isn't even my canna.
I mean, this is the whole thing, right? I mean, I remember being, 15, 16, and just start smoking and getting together with buddies and talking about philosophy and talking about religion and talking about God and talking about this. And this is part of that journey. This is part of that progression. This is part of who I am, who you are, and just this different, kind of iteration, of us in this time and place, so to speak, and definitely, you mentioned a few things there as well, with like things like Canva, right? With things that, you said, kind of taking away the beauty, right? It kind of, it's a good thing. It's a tool, so to speak, but it also, makes everybody think like they're a designer, right? Anybody can be a designer now. Same thing with like, websites, all these kind of things where it's like, it's awesome because it makes things accessible to people. But you know how much time and work and years and everything like that it took for you to be, so good at what you did, in that regard, but yeah, you mentioned, So talk to me how that's led up to, to pop, in that regard, all these kind of things.
So knowing what goes into making something and knowing how quickly it can be, basically what I've done is something anybody else can do. I've created a product line, and I picked I did a lot of research, and I spent a lot of time, and I've advise people who have, I've told them, hey, this is how I did it. And within a few months, they created something similar. And so what I'm doing isn't rocket science. It's formulaic. And what I decided is the stuff that can be formulaic use it, copy it, but the behind story is what you cannot fabricate or you can, I mean, you can, and lots of people want to buy that, but that's not what I'm selling. Because I am a sales professional, and because I do, and a graphic designer, and I've done those both professionally, you bring a different level to them than when you do it as just a passion project. So I took the passion that I felt, the despair that I felt by being 40, unemployed, and kind of like, okay, I had so many of my dreams fulfilled in my life. I'm a mother, I'm a wife. Those were very important things to me, but I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I didn't see a path. I honestly would have been happy being promoted at a large company. I would have, I had that desire. I've always had a desire for entrepreneurship. My father is a business professor, was a business professor. And so we were always dreaming up companies, but in this case, I really felt like I had no options. Of course, you always have options, but that's what the story I chose to write was that this is the only way, and that I had to go through it by agony. I had to put myself through the ringer and see who I really was, and take that misery and turn it into the popped brand. And I think I've done that, and I think it's working. And I think I didn't have to do it that way. So for anybody who's thinking about creating a brand, whether it's CBD or being an entrepreneur, you don't have to do it that way. You don't have to torture yourself, you know, but I did. But what I did is say, okay, I had seen a woman create a home-based business when I grew up, Mom's Best Cookies. Shout out to my elementary school pal who I haven't seen in 30 years or 40 years, 35 years, a long time. But she manufactured in her home cookies. And so I saw the way that worked. And I also saw that beauty was a big trend, and that really the way for women to create businesses was, how do I find something that is very affordable, accessible to do, that I can do in my home, that doesn't take a lot of extra equipment or anything, that I can then, the hustle is what's going to get me there. Going to street fairs and talking to customers and saying, doing market research, doing all the things that I've learned at a Fortune company, and doing them grassroots. So I'm taking this professional level, but I'm breaking it down. So I wasn't coming from, you know, a 22-year-old who created a product, and I kudos to you, girl, if you're doing that. But I was coming from a space where I have all these professional experiences. How do I layer them to come up with something new? And that's what I did. I went to Google, I looked up recipes, I used my kind of my knowledge of people. I talk a lot to people, I listen a lot, and I know what people like. I know when people like me and when they don't. And I was able to take those qualities that people do like about me and put them into a brand, which you can't do as an individual. You can't just go, I'm going to get rid of the qualities that people don't like about me, and because then you're a phony. But with a brand, you can be authentic and bring those positive qualities forward, and then still have your authentic self as a human, where you embrace what could be seen as negative. I'm actually working. I'm doing a lot of vision boarding on that right now.
I love that. I love the vision boarding too. It was so funny. I just had a session with vision boarding this week. I think it's super important, especially entrepreneurship and all this stuff, because, you know, entrepreneurship, I love it. I wouldn't choose to do anything else. Sometimes it's very, you know, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of things. And, you know, there's not just checking in and clocking in and getting your paycheck. You know, it's about having that vision, having those goals, having that roadmap, and getting there and putting in the work step by step. And that's what I hear here. You know, that's what I hear from you. You know, I saw that you make everything by hand yourself. So you're right. You know, there's something that anybody can do, so to speak. Right. And I think that's something that everybody thinks that they have a $1 billion idea, and everybody thinks they have a $1 billion this or that. And it's always down to execution. You know, it's always down to knowing, you know, people think ideas don't make brands, ideas don't make companies, ideas don't make money. You know, execution does, you know, and like you said, authenticity, you know, and I think that's something that we see a lot in the cannabis industry, where we see all these celebrities coming in. Everybody's got a cannabis brand. It's not even fun anymore. It's not even new. It's nothing behind there, right? And a lot of them don't give back. A lot of them don't do anything like that. So whatever, to each his own, all that fun stuff. But what we've seen, you know, why don't they take off, right? Why do they seem to be struggling so much? All these well-funded celebrity-backed brands, because like you said, there's no authenticity there. There's nothing there. People at the end of the day, as you know, as a sales professional, right? More than we buy the products, which we do, they got to be good products, right? We buy people, we buy teams, right? When investors invest in something, they're investing in the team, right? They're not investing in an idea. You know, it's like, I say, YouTube, if YouTube would have come up in 2000, if I had that idea, would I be in the same position they are? Probably not. They had amazing execution, amazing team. So I love hearing that, you know, and, you know, you also mentioned earlier, right? You mentioned that when you were growing up, that there was a lot of, you felt that there was your use, that you were, you know, faced a lot of stigma and internalized stigma. Where do you think that come from? Just because we were all kind of raised with that, you know, raised with that, kind of education, that dare kind of thing, or was there something else going on there underneath the surface?
No, I think I grew up in, you know, I think what was surprising to me in the last few years is that my childhood was what you would see on TV as a typical kid in the suburbs. I mean, I had a pretty good life, and I went to a kind of a liberal arts high school, 2,600 kids, something you would see in a movie like Can't Hardly Wait or one of those, you know, silly teen comedies, and or Mean Girls, right? I always saw myself as an outsider. And I think that's a popular entrepreneur perspective. But you asked me about stigma. I think it totally came from my parents and being part of the DARE culture. And I think I was always very curious about drugs, but very scared. And I've got to be honest, I love the idea of drugs, but for me personally, I'm a lightweight. So, you know, I'll get excited and I'll want to try things, but then I'm like, oh, you know, I'm here to talk about moderation too. We didn't mention that, but I think that's a really important thing. That's going to be, people need to hear that as we're talking about stigma. We're not saying, hey, let's go use as much cannabis as possible. We're saying now you have options. And I do think that people are going to feel pressured because of pressure to use cannabis, even when they're not into it, because of the popularity of it. And so I think that there are different things to keep in mind, which is one, don't feel peer pressured. You can have your drug of choice, and don't yuck someone else's yum, which is something I learned being a mom. Do not yuck someone else's yum. So, and you know, don't peer pressure people. It's not cool.
No, definitely. And like you said, moderation, I think, you know, one thing that we're seeing here, you know, with the legalization and people talking about federal legalization, you know, is, you know, all this kind of imposed regulations on people, you know, that they're trying to pass, you know, whereas, you know, you can go down to the market, go down to any store and pick up a six pack or pick up, you know, a bottle of whatever. And they're not going to ask, well, you know, how many bottles limited, or, you know, you can have a home brew of beer and you know, and being able to give that, right. But we can't have growing at home or being able to share that. Right. So I think, but the moderation is definitely something that I think automatically we think of cannabis and we think of those stigmas and we think of a pothead, right? We think of, you know, a stoner, we think of, you know, all these things and gateway drug, and it's going to lead to this, that. Whereas a matter of fact, it's a plant, and plant-based medicine, you know, been around for thousands of years, and wellness. And we see, like you said, right, you know, it affects everybody, right? Endocannabinoid system. So definitely something that we're trying to get better on. Something, you know, that also you mentioned, you know, was, you know, caretakers for caretakers, right? So what is the connection between popped and caretakers, you know, and especially for special needs moms? Can you talk to me about that?
Well, let me break that down into two. First, we call ourselves the caretaker's caretaker, and it kind of took me, I grew up with an advertising background, marketing, and, you know, I catchy slogans, but it took me actually 3 years to really come up with that line, that tagline, the caretaker's caretaker. And what I had to do was I had to meet our customers and figure out who they were. And they were mostly people who had pain. And when you looked at it, the pain was because they were neglecting themselves, because I'm a helper, you're a helper. We literally get off on helping other people. That's what makes us happy, right? I want to help. I want to give. I want to, for some reason. And I think that that's something that, you know, for me personally, I'm also looking into being in moderation for that, right? I got to make sure I take care of myself before I take care of others. So I'm trying to create a place where people who believe that you should help other people, to remind myself and others, you've got to put yourself first. You've got to take care of yourself, put on your oxygen mask, or you can't take care of anyone else. And so that's the message that I really want to get out. And one place where I've seen, so we've talked about privilege before just privately, but one thing that we don't talk about is the privilege of health. And I am very blessed that I am, you know, besides the obvious, I'm a white woman. I grew up in an upper middle class. I was gifted a college education. I have lots of privilege there. But what I'm seeing now is the privilege of health. And I do recognize that some of that comes from those other privileges that I mentioned, because I get treated better by the system. However, I rarely go to a doctor. So when I talk about my health, I'm talking about just, you know, I have high cholesterol, but I'm skinny, and I gotta work on that one. I'm thin, you know, even though I put on the COVID-19, you know, I have a good metabolism. I'm very lucky. It's never been hard for me to kind of keep up with the European beauty standards that are thrust upon us women. But that's a gift. That's a really great gift that I can, you know, eat well and exercise and be healthy and take little to no medication, not have to go to the doctor's often, not have a lot of health problems. In the last few years, I've struggled with my health, and that made me, of course, more grateful for it, right? Youth is wasted on the young. And so realizing as a mom that I wasn't putting myself first, and that I was in a lot of pain. I was really in quite bad shape, and I've been in physical therapy now for almost 2 years, and I thought I was ready to quit, but I need to go back. I'm not ready, but as a wife, a mother, the demands that we put on ourselves, as humans, but specifically as working moms, it's a lot. And so I think that I really say, sure, yes, it'd be great if my product helps you feel better and that's what you want to use. But overall, the message is you need to put yourself first. And I've really worked for myself in creating, what does that mean? And how do I put myself first when I think most parents, many parents do not do that. I would give my life for my children. I would. But since we're not in a life or death situation, I have to remember to stay calm and eat lunch before I feed, you know, before I feed them. If I'm hungry, before I, you know, if I pass out, I can't make them lunch. If I am in bed for 3 days because I can't turn my neck because I've internalized all my stress into my neck and I can't move, how can I help anybody else? And so it's about self-care for caregivers. And I really see us more than just this product that we make, that we're an organization to help people. And I think that's where the brand is going to be so powerful, that we can say, what else do you need? That the product was just one thing that we do. And that is where, as a business, we need to look at that first and figure out how to monetize it. But as a company and a brand, we need to figure out how do we serve our customers and what do they need? Because one of the ways to help caretakers is by being not a one-stop shop, but a multi-stop shop. You know, they anticipating people's needs and saying, okay, I see you need this. I'm very fortunate. My child was very ill when he was born, and it was a really scary time. I wrote a little blog during that time, but it made me really, so he had to go to, he had all these services, occupational therapy, physical therapy. We had people coming to the house a couple times a day. We had to go take him to different appointments. And as someone with a new child, and especially then when you have a second child and you've got two babies, two adults, no money for babysitting or anything like that. We were just constantly struggling and it just, we couldn't keep up. And we're really just now, as my children are getting older, 11 and 9, catching our breath. And I see people who didn't have the means that we had, like at least I could take a cab when I needed to. So I see families struggling. And then I just know what, you know, we send our kids to public school. So I see what other families go through. And I was having a hard time, and I'm privileged. So what does someone who's not privileged, how do they deal with it? And so that's really what I, you know, am trying to figure out and trying to, I guess, compensate for.
For sure. You know, and I appreciate you sharing all that. You know, I think, you know, especially, you know, as you mentioned, you know, caretakers for the caretakers. And it started off as, you know, this kind of a catchy phrase, and no, but you're 100% right. You know, where it's, you know, I think people look for things that resonate with them. Right. And you know, people are, while it's, you know, marketing catchy, this or that, there's so many people who need help in that regard, you know, who, like you were saying, you know, it's not unique, right? You know, internally I was in the pain, and, you know, it's almost a meme now. You know, I'm not having it, had the privilege of having children, hopefully soon, but, you know, seeing all my friends and seeing how it's like, you know, oh, I got to, you know, poop with the door closed, you know, I got to eat a meal sitting down, I got to do this, you know, because it's just so much going on. And why? Because, you know, like you said, right, as parents want to give everything, would give in everything, right? I was always raised with that, and my parents always told me, and they given me so much in that regard as well. And, but, you know, how are we taking care of ourselves? You know, what are we doing to for self-care if we can't, there's nothing to give, how can we give to somebody else in that regard? So,
and it's not like that in other countries. Mm-hmm. There are other countries where parents get longer leave. They get services. I have to say, when my child was ill, the care, the services that he received were outstanding. And I had little trouble, because he had a medical diagnosis, getting him those services. But I know other parents who, I mean, let's just say you don't have an education and you don't know what your rights are. You're not going to easily get the services that you need. And for my experience, it's for parent, but I really want to keep it open and say anyone who's taking care of someone else who's a dependent really has a lot on their plate. I have one friend and customer whose child is a special needs child for life. They're a special needs adult. And so they're never going to get that part of parenting. They do have other children, but there's something for those parents who, having a child is creating a life and setting it free, right? I mean, hopefully they come back to you. But you've got to let the bird free. And, mm-hmm. and sometimes you can't do that because the child isn't capable. Mm. And there should be a social safety net for that. But we know what happens in institutions. We know that things break down and that bad things happen. And so even though we're kind of a fun and casual CBD company, one thing is really important is that we feel that we can hopefully make a change in healthcare where, I mean, look, 50 years ago, diabetes was stigmatized. So like you don't see special needs children, like severe special needs children. You don't see them all the time around in what we used to say was normal. They're very much hidden in society. And there's a lot of people who fall into this category, but because of shame, stigma, or just the difficulty of getting a child out, that the wear and tear on a parent, imagine a 35-year-old toddler. Our society isn't set up for that. And so we either publicly or privately or both need to find places the people who live with those children or caretakers, caregiver, sorry. Help me out here.
Yeah, no, caregivers. Yeah. Right.
The caregivers need to be accepted and seen for the work that they do. And they often aren't. And maybe sometimes they don't want to be, maybe they want privacy, but I think that there's you know, some that don't and some that cannot function in this world. And they're, I'd like to provide a place where they can.
Definitely. And you talk about that, you know, being so important to the brand, you know, in terms of, you know, if it's come up, you know, obviously, you know, talking about privilege and talking about, you know, creating spaces and talking what that means, you know, what does that mean, you know, for Popped, and what are you doing to keep that going? You know, cause I think it's very, very important for sure. In general, and definitely in today's day and age.
Well, I think that's where you go back from ideas are there. Execution is the hard part. And so in reality, a retail space in New York City is extremely expensive. And while it can be lucrative, it's a very hard business. I've done retail in New York and I've seen what's required in order to make it work. So really what happens is that a brand that is a passion project. And so I could see if I could get the success that I desire for the brand, then we could be able to do projects that are this interesting hybrid of testing things out, really, you know, doing marketing projects that are testing concepts that are really new and using our budget to create these projects that are for social good. So for example, is there demand for caretakers and even minors who use cannabis for medical, like say you're a cancer patient. There's a certain innocence that's lost in that struggle. And so during that struggle, is there a place for you to go and get high with and celebrate and not be ashamed, because there is a beauty in cannabis. And I still feel some shame about the difference between using it medically and using it to get recreational, to get high. And I think that you're going to see, especially it's important to remove stigma to talk, to elevate cannabis. But I think we also need to not take ourselves too seriously and remember that it's supposed to be fun and it's supposed to make you happy. Yeah. And you can't, it's really hard to be happy when people are trying to bring you down and telling you you're doing something wrong. So to create a space for whether it's, I know it sounds kind of radical to create a space for children to use cannabis, to create a space for adults who are treating, who have children. I actually saw something, there's a Weed the People is a documentary written by someone in my neighborhood, I think. And it's about families using cannabis, and the adults don't use the cannabis in front of the children. You know, they were doing dab hits, and which is, in my opinion, unless you have a very serious condition, you're probably dabbing for fun. And I could be wrong. I haven't talked to I have to ask a doctor about that, but it seems pretty recreational to me. What's your opinion on that?
No, definitely. I mean, you know, I mean, something came up though too. What do you mean that you're ashamed, you know, between the medical and the, you know, the adult use, recreational use? You mean because some people need to use it for medicine and you're allowed to? I mean, what, I was really interested.
I did say I'm ashamed, but I don't think I am ashamed. I think I'm still reflecting on what that means and reconciling a bit with it. I had a conversation with last night, a pharmacist, a cannabis pharmacist and a cannabis entrepreneur, consultant. And we were talking about the difference in those words and that the language is so important and you have to kind of be careful, but then it's like, fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this plan is here for all of us, right? So, you know, there, you know, it's been said, right, that all use is kind of medical use in a certain sense. And that's why, you know, it is so important to have accessibility, you know, in that regard, because everybody has a different reason why, you know, I mean, we talked about, you know, kind of getting into it as you know, younger years and everything. And for me, it was about, you know, chilling, hanging out with my friends, talking about philosophy, talking about God and watching Half Baked and, you know, watching movies and laughing and kidding and all that fun stuff and having a great time. You know, I mean, that's stuff that I think we have to maintain, keep that close to us, you know, and, you know, like you said, not take it so seriously in that regard, and also honor and respect those who do need it, you know, for more serious medical purposes in that regard, and not necessarily say, okay, cool, I'm not, thank God, like you said, right, I'm very grateful to be able to be healthy and be able to do that, right? But that's why it's important, you know, to normalize and to take away that stigma, because they're only people that they're really hurting. I wish it was just themselves, but they're hurting other people in that regard. You know, when people are maintaining those kind of views and maintaining that kind of stuff and being able to educate people in the right way to show. And unfortunately, a lot of people, when they do come around, it's because they themselves personally have been impacted in some way. And then all of a sudden, like, oh yeah, I wish I would have known, or, you know, my quality of life could have been better 10 years ago, or, you know, it really helped my mom in this thing, or it really helped my kid, or it really helped then. And it sucks. You know, why does it have to get to that point? You know, where it's some big outer thing where it's, you know, this is there for everybody, you know, it's there for everybody. So I definitely reflect on that. For sure. I guess, you know, you getting out there and getting this, what's kind of been the biggest obstacle so far that you guys are faced or that you're still facing now with Pop? Because I know you have a lot of big dreams, a lot of big goals, you know, in that regard.
My biggest setbacks have only been, you know, fear and you know, I did have physical pain. I do believe it was a manifestation of my fear, and I've been working to get healthy and strong both physically and mentally, because when you're successful, there's a lot, there's glass half full, glass half empty. There's a lot of black and white where you can choose to look at something and, you know, you get someone to make a mean comment on your social media, or, you know, weird things come up. And so for me, it's been just getting myself strong enough to be ready for what the next 10 to 15 years are going to, 20 years are going to hold, because I'm in this for the long haul and I love working. I love creating and I love helping people. And so I have to make sure that I put my oxygen mask on first, get myself ready, because the opportunities are just starting to come to me instead of me going to them. And that's what is should happen, right? That's how it should be. Like, you found me and, you know, you're amazing and you're doing all these cool things. And I'm really excited about getting to know you and just getting to know a lot of different people and hearing different opinions. And I think that the world has had a big gut punch in the last year and a half. And so what it needs is people like us to say, okay, I'm getting up from the gut punch and I'm going to look at the positive. And for the people who are having trouble looking at the positive, I'm going to help them, because what's the alternative?
100%. Thank you for sharing that. You know, I think like the great philosopher Ludacris said, real recognize real, right? So I appreciate you saying that, you know, and it always is to me about that vibe check. It's always about, to me, you know, that integrity. To me, it's so important. You know, to me, that's the most important thing, and being able to bring that out and being able to spread that, you know, to me, that's really what it's all about. So I really, really appreciate you saying that. You know, so what do we have coming down then? You know, Popped NYC, you know, the future, I think the future is very bright, right? And you were saying, you know, helping people. Actually, before we get to that, you know, you're talking about helping people, right? And, you know, like sages say, right, when there is no leader, be a leader, right? So it's super important, you know, and sometimes we help by, you know, even when we're down, right? You know, it's kind of a contradiction what we're saying earlier, is that caregiver, right? But, you know, maybe I'm saying this because I am kind of have those kind of tendencies as well. But, you know, when we're feeling down, when we're feeling whatever else, when we go and we help someone else, you know, it's almost like it's helping us as well, you know, in certain kind of respects, you know, and being a teacher, right? You learn by teaching, you know, this kind of thing. So I think definitely the world definitely has had a huge gut punch. It's been very difficult, obviously, for so many people. And I'm grateful to say that for me, it's, you know, it hasn't affected me in that regard, but that gives me an opportunity to go out and to help people, to seek out other people who have had a problem, just even by picking up the phone, sending a voice message, sending a text, you know, whatever else it is, and getting out there and getting that word out there. And that's why seeking people like yourself as well. So, but yeah, you know, what is coming down the line with Pop? Because I love what you've done. You know, I see, you know, with the branding, with the design, with everything that goes along with it, and the way that you're doing it, you know, as well, you know, it's kind of that full package, you know, in terms of like looking great, everything's on par, everything's, and doing it for the right reasons, integrity. You know, I would love to see, you know, more brands like yours being successful, as opposed to maybe things that are just kind of, you know, sterile, you know, for lack of a better term in that regard, you know. So what do you have coming up as well?
Well, first of all, I'm just going to keep a soundbite of that and have my husband play it when he wants to get me in the mood. Don't tell your wife. That was so flattering. I appreciate it. I am the whole package, and so is the brand. Thank you.
You got it.
I guess I'll do a bit of promotion right now, which so what I do is I created a body butter, and it's 6 ingredients and they're all natural. And what I've done is partner with a company called Isodyl, who makes hemp, and it's THC free. And the reason I did that is because I started this company before the Farm Bill passed, and I didn't want to have any problems shipping nationally if need be. So it had to be zero THC, and that was hard to come by at the time. And I got to tell you, the price has dropped dramatically since then. But it's a really good product, even though if when you're in the industry and when you're learning about it and you're like, I'm a CBD snob, some people will not like isolate. They will want a broad spectrum or a full spectrum. But this product works, and that's what was important. And then I do think that for certain reasons, it's important to have a THC-free product, because if you're already using cannabis recreationally or medicinally, and you need the anti-inflammatory part of CBD, then you might not want the other cannabinoids that have other qualities in it. So it's like, if you take a Tylenol, you might not want Tylenol with codeine. So this is just anti-inflammatory. And that's where I think the line is very special. However, I do think from a marketing perspective, that's a lot to sell a consumer. And it's going to be a tough sell that I might not be able to do as a one-woman show. If I can gain some traction and grow quickly, I might be able to inform the education behind that. But especially when somebody else is selling your product. So we do three models. We do direct to consumer, we do wholesale, and we do retail pop-ups. And that's the retail pop-ups that I started doing were really for me to do market research. We're actually booked for our first trade show in a couple months. More details on that soon. So that's really what I was doing, is getting ready for trade shows. And so when you do a trade show, you're selling something to someone, but they're going to have to spread your message. And so the more difficult it is for them, the tougher time you're going to have keeping that. One of the dreams I have for Popped is becoming either franchise is the right word, but in the way it plays out, but the concept of the franchise is that because I hand make these products, and because the product, you lose a bit of efficiency in a handmade model, but you actually create opportunities for jobs for people who maybe are not as functional as you. How many people in the world are high functioning? Not many of us. I mean, I'm considered a high
functioning. Depends on your definition of high functioning too. You know, some people may look high functioning emotionally, maybe they're not high functioning, you know, or
exactly.
Vice versa.
So I think that unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever it is, the fact is that we live in a country that is democratic, except that first thing is we are capitalist. And so money actually determines your worth in this country. And while that sucks and isn't right, it is how it works. And you can decide not to buy into that, but that is how our society is. And we can't, I don't know, well, you know, Shark Tank, I think that shows one side of it, right? What if we have another side of it? And I think the Sharks actually, I don't watch it much, but they are doing some good things, and some of them have social good reasons behind them. But when you get so big, when you're starting just making money to help make money, no matter what, you're taking money from someone else. You're not distributing the wealth. So my radical idea is, if I take less and distribute the wealth more, and draw efficiencies in places where people don't want to do the work, and maybe create less efficient processes where people, instead of working on an assembly line, which could be kind of grueling, if you work in a kitchen environment and you get to bottle everything, and you know, you need a certain level GMP, good manufacturing process. You don't want it to look like a Lucille Ball. I don't know if you're familiar with the chocolate.
Oh, I love that scene. Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
Right? So
with the balls.
So you don't want that, but you do want efficiencies, but I'm working on changing my language to be more inclusive. So I'll just say I want to create awareness around that. Typically I would say of mothers and women, but it's of caretakers who do not have the ability to work in society in a corporate America, but perhaps could work, especially a mother or a parent, a caregiver to a child in school. They could work a 9-to-2 shift in a kitchen making these products. And we can, because of the price of the products, they are a premium price, but they are competitive on the market. If we can maintain our premium pricing, we can afford to pay people really good wages, not minimum wage, not even the new $15 minimum wage. But, you know, I'm going to have some number crunchers on this, and I'm an idealist. So I could be totally wrong. And in 10 years, somebody could be like, you said this. And I'll be like, I was wrong. I can't do that. But I think we could afford to pay people really good wages to have jobs where you don't have to have a college degree. You just have to have like some skills. And some of them are, you know, we test, do you have these innate skills? Great. We can train you for this job. I think you know, companies aren't training. I've gotten a lot of jobs at a Fortune company where they just threw me into the fire with no training. Whereas I came from the yearbook company that I worked for. They really invested in their reps. And they didn't always get a good return on their investment. I see that. But they still invested in every person in education and training. And that's important. That's important. And I want to be able to do that for people because I want them to know that we're investing in them. And I want them to be invested in the company. But I don't want them to put us first or second or third. I want them to put us fifth. But when they're with us, I want to be first because they know that we're giving part of ourselves for them and that they give part of themselves for me. And I'm going to bring that back around. In comedy, we call this a callback, but it's not funny. So to my emphasis on putting yourself first, but that God is within all of us. And so if you put God first and God is a part of you, you're putting yourself first and you're wrapping those two things that are so important. And then you're automatically universally connected to everybody else who believes in God and kind of taking away the religion of it where it's I'm Christian, I'm Jewish, I'm even atheist. Do you believe in something? Okay, don't call it God, but you believe. You're not a nihilist where you believe in nothing, right?
All of them are. I mean, probably all of them are, but
Some people are, but
everybody's got a path, you know, everybody's got their own path too. Yeah. You know, I'm sure.
But maybe you could believe in popped.
That's where
my cult starts now.
The cult of popped. I love it. I love it. And yeah, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned there as well, you know, about being able to train, you know, it's all about creating the right culture and having the right kind of people. You know, here, you know, with Calican, right, when I'm not hosting a podcast, we have our digital marketing agency. For me, it's all about, you know, we have a no asshole policy. You know, there may be somebody who's an amazing, amazing person. And I mean, you know, then maybe they need some time to grow and to learn. I'll take that over somebody who's amazing at what they do, but they're just an asshole and suck up, you know, all the air in the room, you know, and it may be somebody who's whether it's an employee or a client, you know, that pertains to everything. You know, you can get someone up to speed. You can't teach, you know, being an amazing person sometimes, unfortunately, you know, so
you have to learn that yourself. You have to fall down and get back up again.
Exactly. Exactly.
But we all fall down and we all fall down. Yeah.
Hopefully you get back up. That's the main thing. We all fall.
Pop is here to help you get back up. But if you're toxic, you know, we can detox you, but you gotta be willing to work.
Willingness is the key word there, right? Willingness, having to have a willingness, you know. So we talked also about arrogance, right? I think arrogance plays a lot of things in what we're just talking about as well. You know, talking about another callback, right? Earlier we were talking about humility, confidence, arrogance, all that fun stuff. And I think that's kind of that arrogance kind of plays a long time when you're not willing to learn, we're not willing to all these kind of things, or it's gotta be your way the highway. It's not an ego there, right? So cool. You know, as we wind down, Lauren, you know, I always love to hear you're an entrepreneur, and it's my favorite question as we go along here. You know, how you define success, whether professionally, personally, spiritually, right? What does success look like for you?
That is a great question. And it's something that I've thought about. And I definitely have a number for that. But there's a minimum number that you need to be able to feel confident in everything else. And success to me is that I am providing for my family. I have time for myself, that I have my list of God, me, my partner, my children, my work, and everything else. That's success. If I'm able to keep those things in alignment, in order, I even picture it like with the chakras. I don't know if you're into the chakras, but
You know, we're talking now about it's the time of the Omer, right? So, you know, for all the Jews out there, right, between Passover and Shavuos, right, we're getting to the cheesecake, right? It's the time of the Omer, right? And what's the Omer? We're working with one little piece, right? Seven, right? Chakras, so to speak, the Sefirot, right? In Kabbalistic terms. And then there's seven times seven, right? So it's 49 days of working of these different pieces within us, these character defects, all these kind of things that we come here to do. So not to cut you off, but yeah, I'm definitely into all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah. This was a new thing to tie those things into the chakras. I like that. Thanks for sharing that with me. That was a great question. I know we're winding up, but you know what I didn't do? I didn't share a little CBD education, and I feel I need to drop some nuggets, some knowledge. So tell me, do you have any questions about CBD?
Will it get you high? No, I'm just kidding.
It's always good. CBD will not get you high. It does not have anything that is intoxicating. It will change the way you feel. It is like caffeine. It is, I've had some discussions on the word, but I feel comfortable using the word, what is the word for caffeine? Do you know? It's intoxicating, but it does change the way you feel.
Stimulant? You mean?
It is not a stimulant. It is actually the opposite. Okay.
Caffeine is a stimulant, but I wasn't quite sure.
I'll get to it. It'll pop up, but I'll just give you a few couple tips or a couple trivia things that are very popular, which is what kind of CBD do you want? So there's three kinds right now on the market. There's broad spectrum, full spectrum, and isolate. The difference is isolate is only CBD and it is the most processed of the plant. So, you know, for me trying to be all natural, I recognize that isolate is actually quite processed. However, it is only the active ingredient that we're looking for anti-inflammatory. Broad spectrum means it has CBD and other cannabinoids, but no THC. And then full spectrum means it has everything. I say it's a party, and this includes THC. Right now, the federal legal limit is 0.3% THC. Why would you want to use isolate when you can use THC? Well, here's some reasons. It's only the ingredient that you want. It will not trigger a THC result on a drug test. It could show up on a drug test. And just if you're in New York, know your rights that you cannot be discriminated against in a hiring process for cannabis in your system. I'm sure there are certain jobs that doesn't apply to, but in general. And then the more different cannabinoids you take, the more possible for drug interactions, not only with other drugs that you take, but just within your own ecosystem. Your body has lots of drugs, lots of chemicals in it. And then lastly, there's personal preference. Some people just don't like to get high. I know it sounds crazy, but some people just don't like it. So those are some of the difference between the different kinds. And then so much more of that information I'm happy to offer at our website. We do private consultations, and as we grow, we'll be hiring cannabis educators, not bud tenders. Kudos to bud tenders. You guys are great, but we're looking for people who have cannabis coaches, cannabis educators, pharmacists, doctors, physicians, who have a broader use. And it's usually not one person who's going to help you. There's not one healer for you. It takes a village. And so we want to be at least one of the villages you visit.
I love that. I love that. And that's popped.nyc. Lauren's great. She's amazing, doing amazing things. Lauren, as I close, you know, I guess talked a little bit about it, but you know, how can listeners find out more about the company, connect with you, buy your products, everything like that?
So we have a website. It's www.popped.nyc. And then we're on all the socials. It's either popped.nyc or poppednyc, whether or not they let us use that period. And, you know, call me, text me, email me. I'd love to hear from you. I'm excited, especially to meet women in the space who want to learn how to start their own business, I'd love to be an advisor to you. When I say that, there's, you know, caveats. I'm not going to build your business for you, but I want to be there for people who want to start businesses. If you have a direct question, that's always a great place to start. For anyone looking to get into cannabis, show up, start going places, start asking questions. When you ask for something, make it reasonable, make it something that somebody can really answer you on, find a resource, help you get to your next resource.
I love that, Lauren. It's so important, you know, being available, you know, putting yourself out there, all that fun stuff. And like you said, education, you know, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to, we live in a time now where we have to be educated on a lot of things that maybe we have a lot of stigma on, and to uneducate ourselves, so to speak, on a lot of the things that we thought we knew, and to seek the real truth, the Emmet, right? As we were sharing before, talking about a callback. Most people won't get it, but we're talking about Emmet means truth in Hebrew, and is also Lauren's son's name. So super cool, super amazing. And Lauren, super spectacular to connect with you. Happy and super excited to see you grow in the future. So thanks again, everybody, for listening where you're listening. And thank you, Lauren, for jumping on with me today, and good luck to you the rest of the year and beyond.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calacan.com. That's grow@calacan.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.